This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
More guests coming your way this hour. Wes, earlier today, in case folks missed it, we're going to rehash this. We gave out mid-season awards in the world of ACC football. And some of these folks will agree with, some will disagree. That's fine. You can have some fun with it. And we even disagreed on a number of these. But there were some that we absolutely, totally agreed on. And so we're going to give you that list, and then we'll go where we totally differ. We both agree that the coach of the year is a guy that we just talked to yesterday. You just saw the interview again, Jeff Hafley. And Wes, as I pointed out to you, I think Dave Clawson, even Dave Dorn at NC State would be guys I would have considered for this award at the halfway point. But Hafley, given first year, no spring, no summer, who knew what the quarterback situation was going to be late until the NCAA woke up and made a decision with Dracovic. I mean, he's really done a great job.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more on that. I think that, especially given everything about new, Jeff Hafley has handled it seamlessly. And, oh, by the way, changed the playing personality of Boston College along the way too, right?
Yep.
Refired the defense. They're doing well. And then, you know, 2 weeks ago they were 64% pass to run. And then last week they flipped the script. I mean, so, you know, their versatility on offense will be challenged certainly Saturday at Clemson. But he has made Boston College a contender again. And we don't know what the bowl landscape looks like, but you got to believe that Boston College has a chance to do something if postseason games are, in fact, staged accordingly. Offensive player of the year, we didn't budge on Trevor Lawrence. Both of us think that the junior quarterback has had an outstanding campaign. He was top five in four categories in the NCAA headed into last weekend. Jordan Addison, the wide receiver of Pittsburgh, really, even with Taysir Mack missing the first couple of weeks for Pittsburgh, Addison has stayed the principal vertical threat. Now, Pittsburgh's had the injury to Kenny Pickett, which has curtailed the throw game somewhat, but Addison has had a really, really good rookie year. And we both agreed on biggest surprise, Boston College, with the 4-2 mark through the first six ball games. Now, where did we differ? Well, we start with defensive player of the year, right? Because you selected, Patrick Jones II from Pittsburgh, Mark?
Yes, and let me emphasize the same thing I said a couple hours ago. I think there's a handful of guys that you could make the case for the mid-year award. I don't believe there's been one that has really kind of stood out and said, oh, that's a no-brainer, kind of like we did with Trevor Lawrence, even though there's a lot of good offensive players in the league too.
Right.
But defensively, the only reason I leaned to Patrick Jones II is, number one, his numbers are fine, and you got to deal with him on every snap. And even though he may not get a stat stuffer, he has an influence on literally every play. I mean, you got to deal with him. I mean, this guy is a problem. He is a Sunday dude. So I want Patrick Jones II. But as I pointed out, there's at least six, seven, eight guys I think you could put on this list and justify accordingly. This is a hard one to pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I went with Nick Jackson, the linebacker, the outside linebacker at Virginia, who has kind of come onto the scene. Charles Snowden is a guy you were familiar with, Noah Taylor, Zane Zandier, but Nick Jackson's come on, and he's had four ball games of 12 or more tackles, and Jackson's just been fantastic. Not only just stopping run, but he gets in space, plays stuff on the screens like he did last Saturday night against Miami, and that's the reason I tabbed Nick Jackson of Virginia, a guy who is averaging about, I think, 15, 16 tackles a game. It's amazing to watch him go get it defensively for the Cavaliers. Best game of the first half in ACC football? We differed here, too. I took the shootout. I took a game that looked more like a whack game, Pack, and that was Carolina-Virginia Tech. Had all the scoring you could get your arms around. Vertical football, quarterback change with Hendon Hooker. I went 56-45. I went 101 points, man. I got after it from a scoring perspective on my best game.
No, I'm going to disagree with you big time on this. There were, listen, no lead changes. Zero. North Carolina jumped them early and rearview mirrored it. You know, I'm gonna jump you on this one. It was 21-0. In 3 minutes, everything was over. And then the Hokies played catch-up the rest of the day. Yeah, if you love a lot of points, I mean, go watch the Big 12. Or better yet, go watch the SEC. They don't tackle anybody in that league anymore. 56-45, I mean, that's one thing. I picked your game. You did this game. NC State Pitt, back and forth. The Wolfpack, no timeouts left. Man, they got a drive against Pitt's defense. I told you earlier, I think this might have been the game that just took the will out of the Pitt D, which I love so much. But this was a great win for NC State. Coming back on the road, beating a ranked team, snapped a ton of streaks, back and forth. He had no idea he was going to win the game. So your game had zero lead changes. None. Zero. My game, the one you called, you called it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to disagree with you on that. Disagree with you on that one. But that's okay. It's all right.
We also differed on biggest disappointment. Boy, Narduzzi's going to have a word with you about Pitt defense.
Well, forget about getting on my case about picking the Pitt D. He needs to get on his team's case because I've been on the bandwagon since June that Pitt was going to be the surprise team in the ACC. And the reason I said that was because of these dudes on the defensive side were going to be nasty. They're going to be salty, filthy. And you know what? In the month of October, they haven't been able to stop anybody. They're giving up nearly 35 a game, four-game losing streak. Open date comes at a perfect time this week just to get everybody rested. So my biggest disappointment was what I thought was going to be one of the best defenses in the country. And they've got Sunday guys on every level, but they just have not gotten the job done closing out games in October. So I hate to do it because I was so high on Pittsburgh, but, man, they just – I don't know what to tell you, Wes. Look at the numbers. They don't lie. Uh-huh. They just gave up 45 to Notre Dame. I mean, they couldn't get off the field. Crazy.
Yeah. My disappointment has been Virginia. And, look, Cavaliers have had some injuries. Brennan Armstrong on the offensive side. Joey Blunt on the defensive side, among others. Devontae Cross has missed some time. But the reality of it was I thought the Cavaliers had brought enough back. I knew there'd be a change at quarterback, and you knew Bryce Perkins would be difficult to replace. But the Armstrong injury compounded that absence. And then, to be honest, I thought defensively they had enough veteran presence back that that it wouldn't be that big a struggle. But it has been. Too many moments like this right here, and Kenneth Walker setting sail on a long TD run for Wake Forest a couple weeks ago.
Well, I'll tell you what, Wes.
It'd be interesting to see the Cavaliers Saturday night against Carolina, by the way.
Here's what you can do since you picked the Virginia crowd there. Charles Snowden's going to be with us tomorrow. You can take it up with the big man tomorrow on the show, all right? I'll let you handle that one. I mean, that's your call. So, I mean, and Snowden's been on before, and he was awesome. So you get the lead tomorrow with Charles Snowden on the show.
Yeah, okay. Seems like a civil guy.
Well, we're going to find out, aren't we? You may hope. At this rate, you may hope for a loss of electricity in the ATL metro area for tomorrow.
Hey, tell you what, just keep your fingers crossed. We got about 50 minutes left to get through this deal, because there are a lot of people in this world, down in this part of the world, don't have the juice this morning.
I just got a note from Gigi, my oldest daughter. She's in Atlanta. They've got no electricity. My youngest daughter is Emerson. She's in Clemson, and they're getting pounded right now. A lot of folks with trees down and all that stuff. So, again, if you're on that I-85 corridor, it's heading right here towards us in Charlotte. So just be careful if you're out and about. Be careful.
All right. Last point, well, actually two, we got the best defensive play, and we both agree that Andrew Booth Jr.'s interception is probably not only the best defensive play, it's probably the best play of the first half in the ACC, right?
That's my call. I mean, Booth's interception, well, not only was it a big play in the game, it was just a ridiculous play in the game. And I mean, when a defensive back wins wide receiver U on our show, it's got to be some kind of play. And this was, Wes, I know who knows what we're going to get in the second half of the season, but I think at the end of the year when we give out all our awards, you're going to see this one again, be my guess.
Yep. Well, not only did we have a defensive back win wide receiver U, we also had a defensive tackle win wide receiver U. And the winner was Aleem McNeil of NC State. Because if Andrew Booth's play is not the best defensive play, then this one is. Lendell Stone's pass batted in the air, and then a 325-pound tackle grabbed it and rumbled and stumbled into the end zone. I'm telling you, this is athleticism on display right here. Let's stiff arm. Get off me, Stone. That's it. Touchdown. That's why Aleem McNeil's defensive play, the pick six, if you will, was my defensive play of the first half. Best offensive play, Pack went with one that's will stand the test of time. There's a lot on the line here with this one, too.
Well, I just picked this one because I thought it should have been intercepted, and it wasn't. And then you figure, how's it going to be caught, especially when I have the Velcro on Tuffy on my helmet, Thayer Thomas. I mean, it's such a ridiculous play that it's still stuck in my craw, and I'm thinking about, all right, the best offensive play is one of the most bizarros, right? Should have been a pick. It wasn't. Turned out to be a touch, and I'm not sure how he caught it. But Thayer Thomas did right off the top of his noggin. So that was my pick.
Yeah, that's a good one. Thayer Thomas. And then I just literally sent the when I was asked for the best offensive play, I just typed Khalil Herbert against Duke, pick any of them. Because he was phenomenal against the Blue Devils. Well over 200 yards of rushing, a couple of touchdowns. You factor in the kicks. Shoot. Cat was 350-odd yards of total offense and all-purpose during the day at Wallace Wade Stadium. Khalil Herbert of Virginia Tech. Unbelievable day, single-handedly, for the Hokies.
We
get a pretty good matchup on Saturday with Herbert and Javian Hawkins of Louisville here on ACCN.
We also had one more category that we differed in, even though we were kind of in the same neighborhood, and that was regarding the halfway point defensive rookie. And you and I both were thinking the same thing because we went immediately. Again, I don't know what your picks are. You didn't know what mine were. But we both went to Clemson's defensive line. And I flipped the coin and said it's either 11 or 98. It's, I mean, those two beasts that Brent Venables gets to play around with position. And you were kind of thinking the same thing I was on this thing. So when we got to that category, I literally flipped a coin and it landed heads. Heads was 11, tails was 98. That's how I looked at it.
Yeah, well, mine was tails. You took Brzee, and I took Murphy. So there you go. Congratulations to the two Clemson rookies. Made it real difficult, by the way. We literally were – I mean, we came down to the same two, and Pack picked one, and I picked the other. And we don't even think of – we don't even talk about this stuff.
No.
It's crazy.
No, it's just – it's funny it turned out that way.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
ACC Network, Packer and Durham. Coveted invite. Katie George is up in about 15 minutes. But, Wes, we're switching gears because we're going to talk about the ACC women's soccer. As I pointed out to you the other day, latest rankings are out. Six ACC teams are ranked in the top 13. Five in the top 10. That includes University of Virginia at the number 10 spot. The league is ridiculously deep and good. And with that said, head coach for Virginia women's soccer, Steve Swanson, joins us. And there he is. Coach, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. How are you, Mark? Wes, good to see you guys.
Well, same here. It's good having you back on the show. We were just bragging actually all week, whether it be the men's side, the women's side, it really doesn't seem to matter in this conference. Soccer is king and queen, if you will. It's amazing how good the league is. I mean, you're sitting here ranked 10th in the country. A lot of folks would go, oh, my God, you ranked 10th. Yeah, well, guess what? We still got teams in front of us we're going to go catch. Nothing's easy in this league, is it? I mean, it's unbelievable how good it is.
Yeah, it's always I came in the league in 2000, and I think that's always been the case. And if anything, it's just gotten more competitive with more teams that we've added and the quality of the teams that have that have come out of the ACC. So it's always been the case, and I think it always will be the case. And I think that's what makes the conference so special.
Coach, you guys are at BC tonight. Match is at 6 o'clock. It's right here on ACC Network. I want to talk about going to BC, just the travel aspects of this. We've talked to folks with football. We've talked to other sports just about moving around in the footprint during the pandemic, all the protocols in place and things like that. What's the experience been like for your club?
Well, it's you almost have to do as much planning, if not more, than preparing for the game. We obviously didn't fly just to be safe. And, you have to take into account what happens if you do get a positive test on the bus, how many people will you lose with that, how do you set up your roster if you're going to do that so that you can compete the next day. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a lot of planning. I give our staff a lot of credit, and I give the administration a lot of credit, and I give the ACC a lot of credit for just trying to allow us to play. It does beat the alternative of not playing, but there's certainly a lot more that you have to take into consideration that you wouldn't otherwise have to.
Well, you're talking about all the planning issues. I mean, even your roster has been a planning issue. 8 games, 8 different lineups. I mean, it just goes again to show you the quality of depth you've got on your team and the confidence I'm sure you have in your players.
Yeah, it's been an unusual year. With the pandemic, it makes it very unusual. But I think this has been an unusual year with our team and just some of the things that have happened to us over the course of the season. As you say, we want to take the positive out of it. And we've given some players some minutes that they wouldn't normally have otherwise had. And that's been a good thing, I think, for us long term. I think that's been a very good thing. But it's certainly, as a coach and our players in the field the same way, you want to get some sort of continuity and get your team that you thought on paper would be the team that would play a lot, the players that would play a lot. That just hasn't happened for us and for different reasons. But, like you said, the competition's it's what it is in the ACC, and you have to deal with it day in and day out. And I think our players over the course of the season have done a really good job of just handling the adversity that we have had. And I think hopefully in the long term, that's going to help us.
Alexis Spanstra is the co-offensive player of the week, 3 goals. In the matches against Louisville and Florida State last week. Obviously, she's provided a tremendous scoring punch for you here recently.
Yeah, she's always been, since the moment she arrived at Virginia, she's had an impact on our team. She's just a tremendous soccer player, great athlete, and somebody we rely on an awful lot. She hurt her ankle in a high ankle sprain our second game of the year, third game of the year, and so we missed her to injury, and then we missed her for a little bit of time with a short quarantine. So she's gone through some things that have not allowed her to be as just on the field as much as she would normally be. But it was good to get her back when we did, and I think hopefully she can hit this stretch drive for us and really be a factor like she's always been.
Hey, I want to go back to this bus ride a second. You know, you guys normally living in style up there, flying all over the joint. So what was that bus trip like from Charlottesville?
All right, I'm going to give you an example of that. We were set to take a sleeper bus, which we normally take on trips, a long trip. But at the very last minute, the bus driver, we needed to have a relay driver because it's past 10 hours. You know, you can only get on the road 10 hours, and up to Boston was potentially going to be longer than that. So the relay driver didn't take their COVID test, which means we had to get another bus to take us the first 3 hours. Then we switched buses 3 hours in, and then we got up here. We left at 6 a.m. We got up here at 6 p.m. And we hung in there, all positive, all good stuff. We managed to make it. And so those are just some of the things that take place that you just don't, you just can't count on in a regular year. But I'll tell you what, it's been good for all of us. I think, you tend to appreciate things much more. And the fact that we're playing, I mean, we would, it's far, far better than the days when I played and you had to drive about 8 cars into some place. You have 4 people each car, so it's totally different. And we just appreciate the fact that we're playing. We'll do whatever it takes to make that happen.
Hey, Coach, let me tell you something. I know you've worn about 10 different hats this year, given the pandemic and all the craziness you're talking about. At what point in time did you say, hey, you know what? I think I got this. Get me behind the wheel. I'll get that sucker up to Boston. I can do this with my eyes closed. I mean, I know that had to cross your mind that you had that in your repertoire.
Well, I there's a lot of things that have come up that I didn't think I might do that I'm doing this year, but it's been good. I'm learning a lot about myself still at my age.
There you go.
A bad thing.
I love it.
Hey, Steve, do you have any I know you're playing this fall schedule. The NCAA's moved the championships into the spring. I mean, do you worry about refiring here after the fall? I mean, I'm as curious about that particular discipline for some of these fall teams as I am anything else that's going to transpire, because I don't know how, like, a team that has great momentum in the fall, you know, that's hard to replicate, you know, when you go back to spring for competitions nationally.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I think that's the big challenge right now. You know, you're going to have a couple months here where you're going to only be as good as your players and what they do and how well they take care of themselves and those kinds of things. The good thing is I feel really good about, you know, the trust that we have in our players. I think they were really good during the March to July time period, and we're just going to need them to be the same way here. The nice thing I think about having the season that we've had, though, is I think it gives them exactly an idea of the things they need to work on and how they can prepare in this time frame between the fall and the spring. And I think that kind of knowledge, that kind of experience, that kind of understanding, I think will help them, you know, once we break here for a little bit. But I think all the players, you know, they're very motivated and they're very dedicated to their sport. And I think it's a matter of just getting them in the right frame of mind and getting them in the right physical proximity to things that they can take advantage of. That's probably the biggest challenge we had during March and July, is just, where are you going to train? Where are you going to practice? Especially if you have to do that alone. So, but it'll be a challenge. No, make no mistake of it.
Wes mentioned that tonight, 6 o'clock, Virginia, BC, right here on ACC Network. You've had great success against the Eagles. You won 7 straight. So what's been the magic formula, other than good players and incredible coaching?
Well, that's been the least of it, I'll tell you that. Good players part, yes. Coaching. Well, I'll tell you, Boston College has always been a team they came into the league a little bit later, obviously, and they've been in the league a while now, and they've done a really good job of developing their program. And one of the things I will say, they're very difficult at their place at home. We've always struggled up here, and they've always been very competitive matches here in Boston. So we expect a very competitive match. I think they're fighting to get into the ACC tournament just like we are. And so we expect we're going to get their best. And the weather's not supposed to be great tonight as well. So there'll be some challenges here that we'll have to manage. But the biggest will be just Boston College, their players, their team. They've always been, like I said, very organized, very physical, very competitive team to play against.
All right, Coach, be well, stay safe. Let's hope that the bus ride home's not nearly as eventful as the bus ride up.
Hey,
maybe
wait, they got to go to Syracuse, man. That bus ride's not going right back to Charlottesville. We got to go to Syracuse after this.
That's exactly right. If I'm driving on the way home, you know things are really dire. Okay?
Stay safe.
Great seeing you guys.
Same here.
Great seeing you
Thanks.
Guys. You
All right.
Spend time.
Thanks,
Care.
Coach. Yep, Steve Swanson is the head coach of Virginia women's soccer. They play Boston College tonight at 6 right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Lots of good guests today. Really good guests. But Thursday, it's not like the perfect Friday 9:30, because she's a busy, busy lady. But we go coveted invite at 9:30 or on a Thursday. Let's bring her on. Katie George joins us. Always love having Katie on. A couple things right out of the gate. Number one, I am pro animal print, so I already like where we're starting on this. All right. Number two, have you become an official extension of University of Virginia football? Because here we go again, Katie George and the Wahoos. We're heading to Charlottesville this weekend.
It feels like that, doesn't it? Especially for Tim Hasselbeck and I. Luckily, West Durham joined us for one of those games when they played NC State at home. But this will be my fifth game covering UVA, and the schedule has already come out for next weekend's games. And I am back in Charlottesville for another game between the Hoos and the Louisville Cardinals, my obviously near and dear to my heart. So I don't know what it is, if that's just how the schedule is kind of shaking out right now. But it seems like Tim Hasselbeck, myself, and Dave O'Brien, we are the official crew for the Virginia Cavaliers this season.
Classic.
Do we think that we might be in line for some letter jackets or bowl gifts at the end of the year?
One could hope, right? If they could just add some cheetah print to the one that they give for me, that'd be ideal, I'd say.
Let me ask you this. From a prep standpoint, Katie, I mean, obviously, you know everything there is to know about UVA football. I mean, you've talked to literally, I would assume, literally everybody. Is there somebody you have not spoken to? And from your job's perspective, given the fact you've had so many Virginia games, I mean, you got to come up with creative angles every week, and that's what makes you so good. So, I mean, you are really kind of put to the max here. It's one thing to say, listen, I got two new teams every week. There's 1,000 different angles I could go on. But you really have to dig to give us new material about Virginia.
Yeah, it's a great point. And it's kind of like a double-edged sword is the way that I look at it. So it's nice because you know exactly what happened the week before because you were there on the sidelines and you saw it for yourself. So you don't have to go back and watch the game and learn what happened a week ago. But on the same hand, you do have to do some digging and you have to be creative with who you want to talk to this week as they prepare for UNC. And I will say the easy part of it maybe is the fact that as sideline reporters, we prepare a lot of stories that we really want to get into the broadcast. Sometimes the game just doesn't dictate that, you know, what happens on the field, it doesn't work to one player angle that you have prepared. And so you don't necessarily get that in like you would want it to. So I've got a lot from Virginia over the past couple of weeks that I still haven't gotten to, and I still think that they're great stories, they're timely, they matter, and I think people would care about them. And so that's nice to just know, hey, if anything, if you don't find maybe the creative angles that you're really looking for this week in terms of this matchup, well, you've got some that you can fall back on because you weren't able to get them in, say, against Miami, against NC State, against Clemson. And so, you know, hopefully I'm able to do that for Virginia's side, but it also – you know, comes down to some of these kids that you talk to playing well and having standout games and making a big tackle or making a big play downfield. And so I'm hopeful for Virginia. I know they've been kicked around a couple of times here. I know these guys are frustrated just in talking to them. They're trying to maintain kind of that positive attitude that we know is a part of the culture from Bronco Mendenhall in Virginia. But when you go down, I mean, as many games as they have, they've lost a couple in a row here. I mean, in the locker room, there's some frustration, and that's just natural because these guys are competitors. So hopefully they're able to come out here, play extremely well, and have some success against UNC because you just want to know that the work you're putting in is worth it. And right now they're not getting that gratification with all these losses piling up quickly.
And, Katie, maximize the fact now that Saturday night, here comes Carolina, who whatever happened at Tallahassee happened. Tar Heels got it right, tried to get it right in the second half to pull that one from the fire. They didn't have that chance, but they certainly performed last Saturday against NC State. It just looks like on paper, Carolina presents a lot of problems for a struggling Virginia defense.
Yeah, when you look at it on paper, it looks like they're going to take their fifth loss of the season, which is so unfortunate. But when you watch UNC, I'm excited to see them in person because they're exciting to watch on the film. They're exciting to watch on TV. I spoke with both running backs, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter, as well as De'Ami Brown, one of their star wide receivers. They have so many offensive weapons, specifically when it comes to the run game, which is maybe not what we saw a year ago. Obviously, Michael Carter, he rushed for more than 1,000 yards last season, so he had some great success last year. But I found it interesting in talking to both of them. They said they felt like the scheme this year, Phil Longo's offensive system, was a little bit different, that was putting the ball in their hands more so, whether that be on the ground in designed runs or they're catching out of the backfield. And so they feel confident in their receiving abilities, but they say, hey, they're getting us the ball as much as possible. We have so many opportunities, and right now they're making the most of it. So, you know, running the football obviously is their bread and butter, but Virginia has been good at stopping the run this season. It's just the big plays, you know, the explosive plays downfield that they've been giving up in the secondary. And that's what's kind of a head scratching to me, because the secondary was their strength last season. You had Bryce Hall, you have Nick Grant, you have a couple other people back there who have some great experience, Joey Blunt being one. I think he's a really fun player to watch, but they've suffered some injuries. And so they've been able to stop the run. It's just what happens on the back end, I think, that's really hurt them defensively. And so can they stop the run in these two backs? I don't know. It's going to be a really tall test. But I've been very, very impressed with this tandem. I think they're the best in the country.
Speaking of head scratching, we know that Mac Brown is 0-for-10 against his alma mater at Florida State. Despite all the incredible accomplishments in his 32 years as a coach, he's also 0-5 all time in Charlottesville, which is kind of crazy. And the last time he stepped foot at Scott Stadium was maybe one of the most memorable L's in the entire series. And we're North Carolina, sixth in the country, chance to really kind of stamp their way into a major bowl. Lost it. Virginia with an incredible comeback back in 96. I'm sure you'll go into all this stuff, but there's always strange storylines when teams meet up for the 125th time. You could go back through history and find some unbelievable games.
Yeah, it's obviously been a long-running game between the two. We've been digging up photos from the early 1900s that they have, and seeing some of those are just wild. Dave O'Brien on our production call, he mentioned that exactly, Pac, that for some reason UVA has kind of been a thorn in Mac Brown's side, and we don't know why this game is so competitive and that Mac Brown hasn't had great success. And I go back to last season when these two met in Chapel Hill. This was the best game of the season our crew saw. It came down to the wire. It was extremely competitive for all four quarters, and what happened was Bryce Perkins basically put the entire team on his back and willed Virginia to win. And I think that was a really tough loss for Mac Brown and his squad. I thought Sam Howell was phenomenal in that game in his freshman year. I thought he had, you know, ice in his veins, made all the throws, but it came down to Bryce Perkins having to make a couple throws, making some plays with his feet. The problem is they don't have that wow player on their offense right now in the quarterback position, and they're filtering through a bunch of guys. You know, I think they want it to be Brennan Armstrong, but they've got a couple playmakers that good things happen when they put the ball in their hands, and Keaton Thompson and Ira Armstead. So I think we'll see more of this 3-QB shuffle, which I think keeps the defense on their toes. I remember talking to Manny Diaz coming out at half last weekend, and he was frustrated. I was like, what do you think of the 3-quarterback rotation? Like, how are your defense, are they handling it? And he was like, it's tough because they keep you off balance. And he was like, we didn't have the film to prepare for this. It was such a small sample size of what they were coming off of against Wake Forest. And he said, not only does it keep you off balance because you're seeing someone new every other play, he said, they're running so many screens and motions and shifts that we were not prepared for. And he said, so we're just kind of trying to navigate it as we go and adapt throughout the second half. And they were able to do so. But now for North Carolina, if you're Bates, like, you have the film against Miami to really sit down and look at what they're doing with their quarterback rotation. So I think for UNC, they're in better hands than Miami was a week ago.
Well, I'll give you the quick. Pac mentioned Scott Stadium as a house of horrors. Only one school has struggled more to win in Charlottesville than North Carolina in the ACC, and that's Georgia Tech, who I think has won there one time from 1990 to now. North Carolina went pack from 1981 to 2010 when they played Katy every other year in Charlottesville and never won. I mean, it's just unbelievable that they went that long and never had success in Charlottesville. In fact, I think they've only won a couple times since 2010. So when you start to stack it up, it gets pretty interesting to watch and see how stuff unfolds here in this rivalry. Any idea where Virginia is at quarterback? I know they talked about rotating. Bronco Mendenhall Monday sounded like they were comfortable playing all three, and it was going to kind of be one of those things henceforth, right? I mean, there's no getting away from it at this point, it sounds like.
It seems like that, and I think that they kind of stumbled upon this, if you will, of, hey, you know, when Brennan Armstrong was in concussion protocol, they had to figure something out. And so they went with this, you know, let's just throw everybody out there and see what happens. Well, it actually worked out when Ira Armstead was in and Keaton Thompson got the ball. They were able to make some plays with their feet. It's tricky, though, because they don't throw the ball very often. And I know Keaton Thompson, he injured his shoulder in preseason camp. And so they basically said, hey, you're shut down. Let's move you to wide receiver. And he was absolutely open to that idea. So he's just now started throwing the ball again in practices and trying to work on his arm. But it makes him very one-dimensional when you put two guys in that can only run the ball and they're not keeping you honest by throwing it. Brennan Armstrong, on the other hand, he can do both, as you see right there. I mean, he can scramble. I don't think they're designing runs for him specifically, but if it presents himself, he can be dangerous on his feet. If I'm Brennan Armstrong, though, you're the guy. You were said, hey, this is your team, and now you're kind of coming back from your injury, and they're still working this three-man rotation. It's like being a setter in college. No setter wants to be told, hey, we're going to run a 6-2 with you because half the rotations can't really get it done. You want to run a 5-1. I mean, that's who you are as a competitor. And so if I'm Brennan Armstrong, I'm thinking, what do I have to do to assert myself? Because I want to be the guy. I want to be out there every single play, and I appreciate what my teammates can bring. But he's got to make some progress here quickly. And I think it starts with the first quarter. They've been bad in first quarters, not against Miami, but everything else prior to. And so if they can start quickly, I think that'll give him some confidence, help him find his rhythm. And maybe we do see more playing time for Brennan Armstrong and not this shuffle back and forth. But again, I think it's important to note Lavelle Davis, the true freshman, 6'7", offensive weapon that, Wes, we had the pleasure of watching against NC State. He will not be available for this game as well. And that's huge, I think, for this Virginia offense. That's a big target that you're not going to have on Saturday.
By the way, coveted, speaking of making some plays with your feet, we bragged about you on Monday's show the best of the weekend, because I think you felt sorry about us old guys on a Packer and Durham and went old school Converse on the display Saturday. And we got a photo, and that made our best of the weekend on Monday's show. So I'm just going to let you know, it was noted by us old dudes that you went Style City down there in beautiful Miami with those old school Converses. We loved them. We thought those were great.
I appreciate it. You know, my dad used to play in high top Converses in high school for his basketball team. Like, I think about that, and how were Converses give you the ankle mobility and the structure that you needed to actually play sports in? But I went with the Converses because obviously it was a monsoon, and I thought, hey, if these, you know, get banged up or whatever and get wet, I think that they'll be okay. They'll be able to make it through. And of course they did. So obviously a phenomenal product.
You did a good job on that. It was It was noted by us old dudes. Let me tell you something. That was tremendous.
Yep. I appreciate it.
Low cut Chucks. You can't go wrong. Katie, safe travels. Stay well. We look forward to Saturday night.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Final segment on show number 248 of Packer and Durham. A lot of really
Monday's
fun,
250?
Interesting guests. Monday is 250. Monday's 250. Here's how it works, Wes. Today's 248.
We made it to 250.
We haven't made it any. We've made it to 248. Tomorrow's 249. Monday's 250. But we got to get there first.
Well, we were. Hey, let me tell you. 248 from this end at 4:30 this morning was.
I saw the text. No power, no electricity. Oof. I was like, oh boy, it's going to be a fun show today now. Walking that tightrope. And again, I know it's headed our way because it's going right up I-85. So for everybody out there, like I said, don't mess with Mother Nature. She's got a pretty good record. So if you think you're cute and clever, I got bad news for you. Don't mess with Mother Nature.
Yeah.
It's like jumping in the ocean. It's not going to work out well.
By the way, the program today, Scott Satterfield, Eric Reveno, Steve Swanson, Katie George, in case you missed it, it's with John Swafford, Jeff Hafley, all available on the Packer and Durham podcast, available wherever platform you use to download your podcast. Great stuff today, Pack. Eric Reveno, sensational. Scott Satterfield, always fabulous. Steve Swanson, fabulous. Katie George, tremendous. Nice program. Well done. Midseason awards with Packer and Durham. Good show. 248 was solid.
Yeah, thought so. And by the way, I got Dabo later this afternoon on our traditional weekly Thursday conversation. There's a lot to talk to him about regarding the health of their football team. They are really, really banged up on the defensive side. So we'll get into that on radio on SiriusXM 84. We'll talk about that tomorrow on the show as well.
We got Notepad tomorrow.
Yep. End of the month.
We're going to do Notepad. We have Notepad for the month of October. Be your opportunity, Mark, tomorrow to tell folks what you're going to dress up like on Saturday to hand out candy and beautiful Myers Park.
For folks that I love Halloween. I mean, I really, really love Halloween. And I just don't think we're going to have a whole lot of happening. I just think this pandemic is just going to really put and we know what stinks too. Halloween's on a Saturday this year, which is great. And we got a full moon, the blue moon. Tomorrow, actually Saturday night. So we got a full moon, a Saturday Halloween, and given this pandemic, I'm not exactly sure there's going to be a whole lot of activity. And I hate that because I love, love, love Halloween.
Curtail your trick-or-treating.
You know, you got to do what you got to do, Wes. Got to do what you got
to
do.
Because I know you like to stand out. I know you like to stand out there and hand out the candy.
I do.
Right?
I love everything about Halloween.
Dressed up as a talk show host.
I love Halloween.
Dressed up as a,
and I found out something about my wife.
Popular sports celebrity.
Yeah, celebrity. I found out something about my wife. We've been married 25 years. I found out something about her this week that I did not know at all. And I walked through the kitchen real quick. I know we got to go through the schedule. Got to make this fast. She was eating candy corn. In 25, 26 years that I've known her, I've never seen her eat a candy corn, and she's just sitting up there just jump, like eating them like M&Ms. And I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I love candy corn. Never knew it. And given how much I love Halloween, I was floored that she threw me a curveball like that. So, again, you learn something new every day. That's all I got for you.
I like the candy corn. Candy corn, quality item.
Nah, we may get into that tomorrow. We may get into that tomorrow.
Guy.
It's not a top 10 for me.
All right. How about the let's hit the schedule tonight. It's a good night in the fall sports schedule. Let's go to the women's soccer card first. Look at all the man. Virginia Boston College, that's here on the network. So is North Carolina Louisville. Volleyball tonight, Wake at Clemson, that's this afternoon. Look at six matches on the women's soccer side, two on the volleyball side. Heavy, heavy dose of that on ACC Network. Three items, and starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon. We'll have updates and results for you tomorrow. Women's soccer, Pitt at Clemson. Amanda West has a dozen goals, Mark.
It's been great.
12 goals for Amanda West of Pittsburgh. Remember when we had like two or three and everybody was like, oh, whoa, Amanda West, then she had six. Now she's got 12.
It's been great. The regular season comes to an end this week. We got games today. Obviously, we have six on Sunday as well. So the regular season for soccer concludes this week.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.